to degrees of Kelvin, but it was also done at 77 degrees on Kelvin and 200 degrees of Kelvin, a few other temperatures. The abstract stands about a few factors of it. But when we go to the generation of metal cluster ion beams, we're talking about focused energy, which is one of the form of dismantling metals, which the first one that was made for the army is non-focused beam. It is just two frequencies at a certain respect, one to each other. Back to you, sir.
Talking about transmutation.
That is correct. I'm talking about transmutation of the material.
Was that transmutation taking place while the crystal was growing at those particular temperatures?
The crystal was a solid hexagonal ferrite compound made of barium, zinc, ferrite, manganium. Back to you.
If I understand correctly, the crystal had already been thoroughly formed, cooled, maybe cooled cryogenically. Then this chemical change takes place.
Certainly. The material also, that the other part of the article, which you don't have over there, was examined in the room temperature as well.
So the change takes place when a certain amplitude of signal at that frequency is applied. Is that when the change takes place?
No, with a certain frequency of given amplitude is applied.
Okay, so it takes a particular amplitude of a particular frequency to make the change. And I guess you're saying if you're at some other frequency or at some lower amplitude below the threshold, you do not get the change.
That is correct.
And I'm curious as to why that was classified until recently and what use was made of it.
Well, if you go to electron avalanche, electron avalanche is a process in which the number of free electrons in medium are subjected to strong acceleration by an electric field, ionizing medium atoms by collision, but ionization, forming new electrons to undergo the same process in three cycles. At the same time, we have another article from Switzerland in Geneva, which stands about the worries over the RF breakdown and damage that cause critical issues in the collider. Then, if we go to theory of comparative RF surface fields at destructive breakdown for various materials from Perry Wilson in 2006, talking about destructive breakdown, which means the breakdown event that results in surface melting over the large areas of the iris tip region of an accelerator structure. Then we could also go to the electrical discharge machining, which is the EDM technology, whereby heating the metal, we're actually able to extract the certain components or the material in pieces. Now, if we take all of this together and go to X-band wavegate made by different materials, by a Kuze-Yukoma, it is shown how the narrow waveguide, which is made of piece of metal that is narrowed in one point but gradually narrowed, shows the concentration of the energy at this particular point. All of this stands about the factor that the frequency by itself with the given amplitude should be reanalyzed with respect to all of the knowledge that you gave us for a year. That's my question in this area, if you could answer.
Not sure that I understand the question. Not sure that I can contribute to the answer. The smart man knows something about what he doesn't know. You're in an area here where I don't know very much.
Okay, if we go to the pictures that you have, were Dr. Judy Wood and John Hutchison. All of the photographs that you have on the top of it, you see the evidence of transmutation and desegregation in samples. this is a solid piece of material, in one particular point, that looked like a piece of wood that was broken up, and you also see a sign of gelification or transportation of the material on this picture. This was made on aluminium and solid iron. Now, we go to the iron. We may also say that in 1967, about 14 million tons of the gray iron, which is a cast ferrous product, so the crystal ferrite, was the largest. There was the largest 14 million tons production of this iron. Now, the same iron was used for most of the metal structures in Manhattan. I believe in 1962, there was a plan for World Trade Center 1 tower to be built. But please, sir.
I do remember seeing the picture of gelification of the aluminum rod. Now, I guess I didn't dig deep enough to figure out what was causing that gelification. I presume temperature was involved, or alloy was involved, but what was creating that gelification where the aluminum square rod looked like it was growing like a tree at the point where the two halves of the rod came apart? Back to you, Wes.
And to explain, it is not only aluminium, it is the iron, or gray iron in specific. The material that was mostly used for the structure of the building. We should go to a mini biography of two individuals. One of them is Joe Hudson, and the other one is Dr. Judy Wood. 1979, John Hudson was born in October 1945. He's a Canadian inventor, and he has a very much extraordinary or maybe controversial phenomena. We could put all of his findings into the hoax area, if not the strong endorsement of Dr. Judy Wood. Let me jump. In 1979, Hudson claimed he discovered a number of unusual phenomena while trying to duplicate the experiments of Nikola Tesla. And although the several of these phenomena jointly were named as Hudson effect, they include, in between, fusion of dissimilar materials such as metal and wood while lacking a displacement, the anomalous heating of metals without burning adjacent materials, and the spontaneous fracturing of metals and changing in crystalline structure and physical properties of metals. Also, appearance of metal samples, this appearance of metal samples, if I say it properly. Let me jump. Okay, in other words, what he was doing trying to use radio frequencies, trying to get to this part to explain that. Most of the videos from his side, also from the side of Dr. Judy Wood, is blank, is disappeared. Before I go to that, Dr. Judy Wood is a former professor of mechanics and engineering in research interest, experimental stress analysis, and structural mechanics. She received her civil engineering in 1981, a master's degree of engineering mechanics and applied physics in 1983. She was PhD of materials engineering since 1992. And that was from Department of Engineering Science Mechanics of Virginia. She was working in a number of universities as a professor, and she was involved in experimental stress analysis and engineering mechanics, mechanics of materials and stress of the material. Now, she was also the assistant professor of mechanical engineering department of Clemson University in South Carolina. The reason that she decided to endorse Mr. Hudson was that found credible samples of the John Hudson experimentation. But one of the videos that I had sent you, I don't know if you have the time, showing in real time, he's experimenting. Jellification of the material in front of your eyes, why is that happening? For one video, I see that, I saw that he was holding in his hand a very small probe, and by directing this probe on the material, he was able to create this, changes to the structure of this material, in particular jellification. Also, he was playing with levitation of the material, which is nothing strong. We have one example of levitation, which is done by electrostatics. Nothing that is secret in this area. Basically, it's formed by two plates of the capacitor, which one of the plates is very light, and is held by the strings to do not fly away. So when you charge that upper plate, you actually creating levitation. He was having a different approach. Now, in 90s, he was visited by four representatives from the army, and they were sitting in his lab for 4 months. Back to you, sir. And
sounds like they were very interested in what he was doing. They had an application for this, and by the way, the probe that was creating jellification, know what that probe was doing. Was there voltage on it? Was there magnetic field on it? Was it hitting a signal? What do you believe the probe was doing? Jellification. Go ahead.
I can only say what John told. He tells that the deformation is taking place in the room temperature as a result of complex combination of electromagnetic fields. It's steel and aluminium, and he was also playing with stainless steel. In one point after the treatment, the stainless steel had the in this particular point of a contact, it had the properties of an iron, strong magnetic field, and he was also able to put a coin on the sample, and the coil simply got into it, not being affected. Also, one of the pictures that you see is a knife that is bonded with the stack of aluminium, but when you look at the samples of jellification, you simply amaze how that possibly could happen. Now, you see in another one, the circle, a cut of the metal which has a wood inside, and the wood is not burnt. And also in figure 5 you see the toilet paper tin, mountain and polish, severely thin section that was removed from the white flange beam, and it shows that that paper is still inside. Now on figure 4 you have a steel beam that came from the World Trade Center, and was part of that beam is very thin. I'm not trying to make any controversy in here. What I'm saying is that concentrated energy may have a very interesting result. You see the instant draft. Sorry about it. Okay. Now, I was trying to get into that from just the perspective of known information that I can find. So I found that the United States Army experiment that showed clearly that by using a frequency wave, we can basically degrade a structure of a metal or replace a certain component within the metal. I also found the graph of hydraulic fluid temperatures and degradations of the typical fluids, which is oil, that used for the burying. It's about 82 degrees of centigrade. And then I was analyzing also the pictures from World Trade Center 1, where the rapid spread of the energy was able to create the instant rust, but on figure 54, you see that plastic covers and the tires on the truck on the platform are not touched, where the cars are completely burned up. So that may tell me that the very short period of time affected strong beams of energy sweeping around the structure is creating, let's say on the paint, is creating the burn up only to a particular material. It looks like there was not, which is strange, there was not enough time for the plastic covers on the wheels and the tires to burn up. But please, sir.
I do remember seeing some of those pictures, serious pictures of the rusting of the steel beams of the building. Those vehicles were overheated, burned in peculiar ways. Now, I think it's possible that the partial burying dust that fell from that building could possibly account for the fact that some portions of a vehicle saw very different temperatures of a portion. So the partial burying may explain some of that. And for all we know, the actual materials that were in that building have some peculiar compositions once they've gone through that process of full high temperatures, tremendous amounts of crushing that took place when 500 million pounds of material fell 110 floors.
At this point, I have a comment. I was analyzing the vector of force of the collecting structure, but before I go to that, in picture number 10, you see in picture number 12, in picture 12, number 12, you see right next to the tree, where the tree is actually buried with the burn structure, the tree has leaves on it, untouched. And the then there is a path which is very sharply created by the force of the energy that was affecting. Now, when we're going to the comparison between the John Hudson and that what happened in World Trade Center, we may go simply to the conclusion. John Hudson might have used a certain energy sources that was very much having very much directivity, but at the same time, the oscillation or the vectors of the structure had to be a very much narrow. Now, one of the pictures that I have sent you shows the floor, which is the square rectangular structure of the thin beam with 45-degree staircase still remaining, while all of the vertical structure is missing. It looks like a vector of the energy was directly from the center down. What is kind of difficult for me to understand was how come the whole vertical structure fall down first, leaving one perfectly untouched square of horizontal, very thin structure with the 45-degree staircase on it, falling down intact. Back to you.
I'm guessing there's no simple explanation for that. The whole event created some high energy physics experiment. Tremendous amounts of weight and various materials crushing down with very high velocity, very high force, very high compression, differential temperatures, differential bearings, and so on. A lot of random experiments were taking place simultaneously.
Yeah, well, the width of the World Trade Center tower was 206 feet in horizontal cutoff. Now, the images from the World Trade Center site that was made by NASA satellite and analyzed by USGS show at September 16 a temperature, and I show you the graph that was still 800 degrees on Kelvin, of Kelvin, in the areas they are marked on one of the pictures. I don't know if you've seen that. There are three images that I have sent you. I see a concentration of World Trade Center towers, but there is another one which is quite far away, one block away, which is the World Trade Center 7, which is being called, I forgot the name. There was another name for it.
The thermal imaging pictures show some peculiar hotspots, and one of the hotspots near building number 7 was pretty far away. But I think your reactants, your materials that were undergoing this chemical and physical assault, some of those materials got blown off to one side toward building number 7, is a guess on my part. Trying to figure out what happened and what the weaknesses of that building were, what improvements they're making with buildings they're constructing. A lot of lessons to be learned. I'm amazed that building was built in some of the ways it was, and Port Authority was allowed to violate so many of the normal fire laws of New York City. Learned some expensive lessons by that. Over to you, Wes.
USGS to the Planck response divided by the solar spectrum, and this has several effects. That was done in the analysis. The data are corrected for the atmospheric absorption and scattering, and the reflected solar components were readily assessed and compensated for the ratio of the black body response for the solar spectrum. Then that produced this step curve that was readily distinguishable from the reflected sunlight and the reflections of the surface of the material.
Yeah, John had a question. Go ahead, John.
That's what I was trying to say. What I'm waiting for is you to just say, you know what? That's what you said the last night when we were talking a week ago. It's hard to swallow that radio frequency could do it. Now, we have a endorsement of Dr. Judy Wood, and she's a scientist, over the Hutchinson. So we know that the samples are real. It's not a hoax. And this area is somehow silent. So if you can enlighten us in this area, Andrew Jeff.
Comes to radio energy applied to a biological material, and in some cases non-biological materials, organic and non-inorganic material. 65 years of research done by what is now called the American National Standard and I, NCC95 report, the one that tells you the radio frequency biohazard effects of radio energy on biologic, on organic materials. Those are my words for it. That's not the title of the document. It's much longer. The 65 years of research, my understanding of its 1,000 references, says that when it comes to organic material interfering with radio waves being applied to it, they have measured all kinds of thermal effects. But when it comes to organic materials, biological materials, have not been able to confirm any non-thermal effects.
That's why the study of the frequency replacing a part of the constant of the metal was done by Army, not by 60 years of research into a GM.
But do you believe that any of those pictures show a non-thermal effect? Was the radio energy doing anything beyond a thermal effect?
Well, do you believe that thermal effect was the factor of the United States Army experimentation showing the ionization in the room temperature or even lower than room temperature of a ferrite-based material, and the structure of this material, fractioning of this material. So we have a technology that was confirmed by United States Army, and then we have a Joe Hudson who actually made that in his lab and to a gym.
Do you believe that the raw material before the radio wave was applied to it was a highly stable material, or was it a material that was on the threshold of converting itself to some other material, and radio wave just supplied that extra energy to kick it over the hill, so to speak? Was the original crystalline material an extremely stable compound?
This was based on just the abstract. You see the frequencies applied, and you see the temperatures applied, and so it's here.
Okay, in some cases, the some cases, the material was being subjected to rather cool temperatures. But still, at the cool temperature, was that normally an extremely stable molecule that then got converted with a very small amount of energy? Or was it an unstable molecule that was on the threshold of converting?
Temperature. Now we're talking about extra cold temperature, or we're talking about colder temperature than normal, or the room temperature, seeing that the material is not in the stable state?
Well, let me ask this question. The amount of radio energy that was applied, was it milliwatts? Was it watts? Was it kilowatts?
Yes, but I know that the Hudson couldn't have a million watts of energy.
I didn't say a milliwatt. I didn't say a million watts. I said, was it milliwatts, watts, or kilowatts?
I believe it was probably somewhere below 1 kilowatt of power.
Okay. Was that amount of power able to create a significant amount of heating? In other words, if the materials involved, the materials involved in the total volume of those materials was such that the specific heat was a low enough number that a kilowatt of radio energy was very significant to it, then the kilowatt of radio energy as a microwave oven heating could kick the material from state A into state B. So did they make it clear what was the specific heat involved of the raw materials and what was the amount of radio energy that was applied and for how long was it applied?
That is the spin echo spectrum was showing a very narrow line of 585 megahertz and respectively 555 megahertz. Those were applied to the research of manganium ions replacing iron, where the temperature of melting iron is 1600 degrees of centigrade and 2 degrees.
Was the Army observing these tests because they thought they had a specific application?
Yes, at my point is extraction of the materials.
Okay, what's the advantage of destructing those materials?
You have a certain structures of the enemy territory and you want this structure to powderize, instantly change from solid to powder or change the stage. That's where you apply that and to exist.
Make this sound like this was weaponized material. This was material being used as a weapon. Thus, remotely by applying a radio signal, we're allowed to make the material change state. Is that the idea?
The idea is that if we were told that this is a narrow beam, I could have said, okay, fine. It's a certain amount of energy on the square centimeter or millimeter of the material. I understand that. But then we deal with nuclear magnetic resonance. As you know, we're not dealing with concentration of ion beam. Now then, if you go to link number 2, which actually shows you another experiment that was done by another entity, that was Department of Chemistry of Baylor University of Waco, Texas. The ultra-extendable triggered spark gap tree that was designed and used as a method of ionization ablation. And so it's
very nice to talk about a narrow beam and a lot of power flux density in watts per square centimeter. Here we're also discussing 500 megacycles. Well, the closest I've ever come to is 432 megacycles. And 432 megacycles, which is not that far away from 500 and something, with using 16 Yagis, 304 elements total, 19 elements per Yagi, 16 of them, 400 square feet of antenna, 20 feet wide, 20 feet high, 13 feet deep. With antenna that large, I was able to get down to a little bit more than a 5-degree width. And that's nowhere near the amount of focusing you're talking about. So to focus energy at 500 megacycles into a very small area kind of phenomena from a remote location, a 400-square-foot antenna is nowhere near enough to do it.
How about if we don't talk about the concentration of energy but affecting of the certain frequency at the certain amplitude, as the NMR has nothing to do with focusing the beam?
But if it takes a kilowatt of energy applied to this bar that I saw in the picture in order to do that, and if I'm not trying to apply a kilowatt of energy to that bar, and I'm doing it from 100 yards away, my goodness, does that require very difficult to achieve hardware.
That's why we don't know everything about it. All we know is that the technology was declassified as not being used. We don't know how that technology evolved into existence.
If it was declassified, it sounds to me like it was not a successful deployment of material that you could really use in a warfare theater. That's a guess on my part.
I agree with you.
What were you saying, John?
Rubbish. All of your thoughts there. Photographic evidence.
Yes.
Don't forget the more corrosive soda.
From the facts, I can say that a cell tower falls down within 10 seconds, and from the photograph that I gave you, it was clearly shown, one of the photographs, that the horizontal structure with the 45-degree staircase is falling intact, while the presence of all of the beams, big beams, in vertical structure, was none. My understanding is that if, let's say, the fuel or other causes made the structure disappear or vaporize or whatever, change, because what we see is just a dust, it was the accumulation of the energy was by the size of the structure. In other words, a beam has a much thicker vertical one than the horizontal one, and that might be what took the heat of the energy with vector directly from inside down and to exit.
Of those pictures you mailed me, some of them were showing seismic energy being measured at various places. In other words, the earth was really shaken by this building coming down.
In Alaska, they were able to measure that event and many other places in the earth.
Yes, they were measuring that seismically and they were measuring that magnetically.
That is correct.
As that building fell, a very distinct signature change in both seismic energy and magnetic energy. And the magnetic energy looked to me like it was the easiest one to detect. So in Alaska, they were measuring the change in the Earth's magnetic field at the instant that those metallic buildings were collapsing. That's kind of interesting that that was possible.
Yeah, in other words, I'm not trying to analyze what caused the damage. I'm talking about materials and materials behavior only. And I don't want to be snapped to any controversy in this area. And to agree.
Now, in 60 seconds, we're about to be cut off. That was TechNet number 1,363 of the series that began in September of 1982. For eyes that are still awake and be kind to each other this week, we'll be back next week to try to settle some more of these very puzzling things that Wesley's bringing to our attention. Back to you for a final, Wesley. We're about to be cut off very soon. K2RIW.
Thank you very much, Dick, for the time that was given to me and me my ability to discuss. It was a very difficult subject, and so is you.
Yeah, this one's not going to be easy to settle. But John's going to figure it all out, and he's going to tell us. How much longer do you think it's going to take to figure this all out, Sean?
Oh, definitely by Sunday. Next week, we'll have all off. Great technique, thank you. Everybody.
Just keep thinking about antennas, John. There's more antennas than fruits meet the eye. You getting that impression?
Typical of me. A lot of antenna. You're right, thousands. Give me a chance.
Can you go into 147? John, can you go to one? John, can you go to 147? 147. John, go to 147. 147. Thank you.
Sirs, N2EO, Echo Inc., Mobile, Route 95, Baltimore, Maryland. Anybody on frequency? N2 Echo Oscar, over. Baltimore, Maryland, Route 95 North. Anybody on frequency? N2EO.
Quick Mobile, N2EO. Whiskey 2, Hotel Charlie Bravo. Hey, Diddy, beat the dash. 195 westbound. Coming in morning, Rich. How you doing?
Morning, John. I thought I'd run into you. You're one of the first ones on in the morning. I'm with Barry, I'm with Patty, and the three of Barry is piloting. I'm in the co-pilot seat here, and we're just coming up from Melbourne, Florida. We are totally exhausted. We started out around 10 a.m. yesterday. Just took about an hour rest in Baltimore. That's on Route 95 North. There, John. W2HCB, John.
Eric, I know the exhausted feeling. I was up working late Friday, and I was up way before the storm Saturday morning. Had to haul the Great South Bay trailer out to the Far Island Lighthouse for a lighthouse lightship weekend. And, we operated around the clock until yesterday. Brought everything back, and by the time I got all settled down, about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and that was it. I was down for the count. But all the lunatics here on the expressway, a little heavy volume this morning. I don't know what's going on here. Middle of the way, running into the garden today. Over there, I got a two and then a pair going anywhere. Going on a trip there from Melbourne, Florida. Hopefully, your traffic has been kind to you. Then, and yeah, quiet morning. I know Zenny P is first, a little later. Yo, 52 Hotel Charlie Bravo. Cross Island Parkway and the 495.
John, I also that we had some packet loss. I heard you say you don't know where Rich BTN is, and then we kind of lost you. But, all right, well, we got quite a crew here. So, like I said, I got myself, Barry, N2MB, Patty, not yet licensed. And we came back with two dogs and a cat. So we had to get Bailey up from Melbourne. And Bosco the cat. So Patty brought the other dog, Chihuahua, down Buddy. So Buddy went down to Melbourne, came up from Melbourne with Bosco and Bailey. So say hello to Patty. I guess John, W2HCB and 2EO.
Good morning, Patty and crew. Boy, Richard, I hope you drive a large vehicle. That's great, yeah. So funny, I was on a service call the other day. There was walking this little dog, and the dog was going, "Don't jump in my service truck." Anything. The dog wanted to get in and go. Company for the ride, you know. Other than that, you know, that's why I did those marathon drives with the family. Everybody fell asleep on me. I was the only one. I was the only one awake. Drove about 9.5 hours, and, stopped the car, they all woke up, said, "We didn't get it hungry." So, hopefully, you get back to the New York area, your traffic won't be too bad, though. That's hot and less humid.
Okay, John, well, as we speak, we're under the, what is this, the Potomac River Valley? We're in a tunnel, but the tunnel has Wi-Fi capability. So, we're making it to you under the Potomac River. All right, John. Well, I wonder, how bad the, did you have any bad rainstorms? Oh, stand by. Wait a minute. You got to pay a toll here. Stand by, John. Be right with you. W2HCB and 2EO. Take your cash lane. All right, John. I hope you're still with me. We paid a bargain, $2 for the tunnel to go under the Potomac River. Okay, John, W2HCB. See if anybody else is on frequency here. And it'll probably be another few hours. What do you think? I was thinking 3 or 4 hours before we get back to Queens. Yeah, about 4 hours, he said. And then he's going to be dropped off in Far Rockaway, and then myself and Patty will head back to Whitestone. Yeah, John, W2HCB and 2EO, Human and Animal Mobile.
All right. Very well. In regards to your question about heavy rainstorms, we had some, over by me, that South Shore wasn't as bad as the North Shore. The North Shore got rocked, Thursday night. North Shore got rocked earlier in the day. About 9 o'clock at night, South Shore got some really heavy downpours. We'll pick up our club trailer Thursday night, my house, back to the driveway. As soon as I get out of the car, I hooked the trailer, the sky opened up. Felt like I had about 100 corners down. Never heard nobody on the internet. Up out there on the road this morning. W2HCB.
All right, John, I don't hear anybody else in there. I see the sun, sky starting to lighten up here. We're coming in on Route 95. I tell you, all three of us have exhausted, especially Barry and 2MV. What? Fine now, he says. He got about an hour of sleep. But, we've been driving, been in motion here most of the time since 10 a.m. yesterday, Sunday. And, what can I tell you? All right, John, look, I think I'm just going to stand by. Maybe some of the other guys will come on. It says here, Pulaski Highway 20 East. I don't know what that is. I don't recognize most of the signs around here. All I recognize is 95 North. Okay, John, let me get 2HCB and 2EO.
Oh, I've been on the Pulaski. I just had to go to a highway for something. But I know how to jump on that for around something. Crack City here. Yeah, that happens. You get exhausted. You full sit for an hour, 5-10 minutes, and you're another few hours. Hit you till you get home. Crawl in your own bed. That's it over. You're down for the count. Paul Barry says he's fine now. Lights out.
All right, John. Very good. Yeah, I see now it's saying New York, North, 95 North, New York. So, all right, John, look, let me catch you later, and I will talk to you probably tomorrow. I'm going to be wiped out. Barry, Patty, we're all going to be wiped out for a day. Barry said he has to take his grandkitties out. Barry is very energetic, so I'm serious. I'm not being sarcastic. He really is very good. Anyway, John, you take care. We'll see you. Let me get 2HCB. This is M2EO, Echo Link, Mobile.
Search, have unusual slowdown over here by one. So, I will try. And two, and the multitudes in the mobile, W2HCV. Have you been? Vacay. Yeah, vacay. We're commenting on that. Bird out of work, they go on vacay. Bite me, alright? You all go and bite me. Bit me out, and you can pick me up and bite me again. Because it's simple as this. It's my 25th wedding anniversary, and I don't care if I was working, not working, whatever. I'm going away. Oh, boy. Hope you left the kids home. Guess you haven't been on Facebook lately. Saw one picture. Lots more. I was quite busy working. I had all weekend I was playing at the lighthouse, or is that following weekend? Done. Over. It was this weekend. Last. Well, couldn't do it because I had to go get daughter from camp. Oh, daughter from camp? Oh, we had a good time, Rich. We had a good... Oh, man, we had a lot of fun. We really did. It was a real good event. We had a blast. Wild with all these drunk people walking back from Kismet. Drunk people walking back from where? Kismet? It was funny. It really was. Doubling tripping fully down over each other. I guess if that's your idea of fun, then I'm glad that you had a good time. One guy goes, I know he parked the car here. Where's my car? Where's my car? And everybody's trying to tell him he's not in the parking lot. He goes, but I see cars. Their voices. Oh, really? So he was looking for his car to go do what? To drive home? In the kitchen? Wonderful.
Wonderful.
To BPN Mobile, by the way. Hey, where are you headed? Where else? Where else would you think that I would be headed?
No.
Oh, well, they've got places to put me. Oh, boy, and they got people to put me there, too.
All right, well, I'm going into the garden. I'm going into the garden this morning.
Well, isn't that just so special?
Isn't that special?
I'm very happy for you and your garden. My way to Brugaline. Brugaline, Gowanus Substation, once again. See what the progress is of the Submariner cable lay installation, blah, blah, blah. Whether or not they even started the second cable yet.
Being to the left there by Van Dam to get around all those idiots. Still lane, right lane, trying to get off the exit from Van Dam. What it is, like Kings over the weekend. Oh, my goodness. Tell you, it was like a party. Right, come on to Midtown Tunnel. Love you too. HCP, on the other side.
Hey, well, I know you got that text picture that I sent you.
So
I'll talk to you when you come out the other side. And to BPN Mobile.
KC2 RQR Mobile.
W2HCB and 2.
KC2 RQR Mobile.
2 RQR and 2 PPN. Good morning.
Cam, KC2 RQR. The name here is Anton, Alpha November, Tango Alpha November. Perched on the Verrazano Bridge. What I'm rolling through, anyway. Good morning.
Anton, name's Rich. Perched. Perched on the Verrazano Bridge. Do a light bulb changer?
Sorry, Rich. I'm driving through, I should have said. Long term.
Problem. I have friends that replace the bulbs on the necklace, so. Very good. So, bound or outbound? Direction headed in.
Let's see. If I go to QTH, it would be in me, so I'd say outbound. Brooklina.
Yes, that is my destination as well today. Over there, 25th Street, west of the Gowanus.
Okay. Hold on. Body's heading off the ramp. Up buddy's New York, and then I got to be down, so the Alpha line.
Very good. Good. I'm just making my way past Kennedy Airport right now on my way out to Brooklyn. Hopefully, the road's still favorable. No flooding, no accidents, no traffic. I'll have to deal with all that on the way home later this afternoon.
Well, Rich, if you would, I don't know where you have to be, but wait till about 7:30. You could board our JFK. What do you think?
That would work for me, except I've got to be over there in that park before 7 o'clock. So I need my Star Trek transporter to be able to help you out that way.
Thank you. Well, I am. Now, oh, it's clear. It's moving. They're good to go. Now, did they call for rain? But I get out of the house and I go, umbrella.
Oh. Today is supposed to be a glorious day. It's up to about 80 degrees, low humidity, it's supposed to be beautiful. So no rain is in the forecast now until about Thursday. Thursday and then over the weekend and the beginning of next week. What is that? Hurricane Eileen might give us a little bit of rain.
Okay, well, I'll always put my words out of my mouth. I say every day is a glorious day because we are above ground. Anyhow, I think your Florida might be hit with that. That's up to the southern tip. My family in Weston. I have Lando.
B2NQN, Mobile.
B2NQN recognized. Well, we'll see what happens, you know. All things are subject to change, I guess. Good morning to his Stevie. Why don't you take a turn and then you can pass it back over to Antoine. Be in Mobile at Cohansey Street.
This is the GB2NQN Mobile. It's getting on the viaduct. Morning. Watching through the last night's stormy puddles. Surprised our power did not go out, which was good because I was doing my fantasy football draft. That would have really sucked. In any event, saw the pictures, read the book. Looks like you had fun and a lot of skipping, so you'll tell me about that. Antoine, my name is Steve and I'm not quite normal.
No problem, Steve. Good morning. Was able to find what the scale is. Where the scale lies. Yeah, I'm,
Get scout for me as I head westbound on the Belt Parkway. Coming up to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, which happens to be the address of the dump, surprisingly enough. Because the last set of buildings by, Starrett City is 1500. And then you go over the Belt dump, so the dump is 1600.
Yes.
Yeah, we had quite a glorious time there. I found a beautiful concrete launching ramp. Easy out about, let's see, maybe 10 to 15 minutes of Claudio's. So you can head out there. We had a glorious time. Took a really lovely ride completely around Shelter Island. That was nice. Explored all sorts of places. The only place it got a little sketchy was we went back in towards Southold, a pond that comes up right on the south side of 48 from Southold Beach. I was looking for the entrance to the pond, but the water got real shallow, and I didn't feel like bumping bottom, so we turned around and headed out. But you could probably get in there with a kayak. Have a lot of fun because it looks like a very nice big pond. But we had a good time. You saw lots of pitches. Lots of pitches, more shells than you could shake a stick at. Over to you. And to PPN.
Alrighty then, very good. Yeah, it looked like you guys are having fun. I was interested in the adventure. Current swift, it was, you'll tell me. Depends when you hit it, too. If it's incoming or outgoing, it really long. Right where the ferry runs on the north end. They go weak fishing over there. A little further down, you know, away from Shelter Island. Kick butt. That was in the 70s. I don't think they've seen those days like that. I know they're still around, but they'll fish. They ride on their sickle. Antoine, go ahead.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to make this my last call. Matter of fact, I got to get off on Pennsylvania. Go up the Florida, Pennsylvania. So, and have a good rest. Like you are Mobile. It's going to be...
You didn't tell me about the cops sitting over here by the construction zone. Right. Got somebody pulled over anyway. All right, very good. Drive safe and enjoy the rest of your day there, Antoine. Just give me, the current really wasn't of any consequence. I mean, we were out cruising. We weren't, like, drifting or fishing or doing anything. We were just out cruising. Had lunch on Shelter Island on, I guess that was Wednesday? Thursday, we had lunch on Shelter Island. It was glorious. We had a really good time. And Wendy's little Hyundai pulled that boat with no problem at all. I threw a hitch on it. Got the wiring kit, the hitch. I think I went to ehitch.com or something. I found her hitch for $75. Now, $30 or something for the electronics and blah, blah, blah. By the time I was done, I think it was like $120 delivered to the house. Super Express service and whatnot. I was like, cool. showed up exactly when it was supposed to. Took me all of about 30 minutes to do the full install, soup to nuts. So I was very, very pleased. And like I said, very well-behaved little trailer and boat, so our car had no problem launching it, hauling it, driving it, whatnot. Didn't even affect the gas mileage. The only thing that suffered through the whole thing was the trailerable cover on the boat. One of the straps had gotten damaged from the rains a couple of days before. My son didn't fasten the cover down right, so we had two huge puddles, pulled and ripped one of the fasteners, and with the billowing and whatnot on the road.
All right, I get the gist of it. Don't like too much calamity. Good. I'm trying to think of Shelter Island. Tell me where you went to eat. The Ram Inn's still open? I guess you didn't venture that far. You were on foot. So wherever was within walking distance of the shoes about using it?
Actually, no. That was the most amazing thing, because we got the South Hole Town beach pass or whatever from the hotel. And I had it in the windshield, and it happened to be that this boat launching ramp is also at a town beach. So, and there was nobody, the best part about it was there was nobody at the guard booth when we pulled in. You know, they have that little like Jones Beach, little ticket booth. There was nobody there. All the days they will say, you know, that we went there, there was a lifeguard on duty, so we do know it was a manned, you know, place. But again, we were there during the week, not on the weekend. So, definitely glorious, glorious. The ramp is at the end of Manhasset Avenue, which is, I believe, one or two right turns just east of Main.